Welcome back to another episode of Run Yogi Diaries. This is your host, Santosh Shiva. If you're new to the channel, please do remember to subscribe, hit like if you like this conversation, and leave your comments below and let us know what you took away. Excited to have today Sonia Ahuja. She is an amazing athlete whose conversation you don't want to miss. Sonia lives in Los Angeles, California area, and she's been doing some great stuff in the ultra scene. She's podiumed 100 milers in Florida, as well as the Brazil 135. And last week, she completed her Badwater 135, one of the toughest ultra races in the world, and she finished fourth. And she was the second fastest female in the course. I love this conversation. I hope you do as much as I did talking to her. Her mindset, her attitude, her approach to life in general is inspiring and is full of amazing wisdom. Let's dig in. Hey, Sonia, welcome to Run Yogi Diaries.
Thank you. I'm really excited about it.
Nice. Such an honor and a pleasure to have you on the show. For those who don't know who you are, let me do a quick introduction, take a stab at introducing you, and then we'll go from there. Absolutely. How about that? Okay. So, Sonia Ahuja, you're an ultra runner, and that's what we're here to talk about. And a quick summary of your extraordinary achievements. You've done multiple ultras. I see that you've done about 3 100 milers. What's interesting is that you also place. You're a winner of the Miami, Florida 100 miler. That's so amazing. You don't get to see many Indian athletes go and win. You know, there are a lot of people who participate, but very few go out do the podium. So, you know, very proud of you. Amazing. And then, of course, more recently, last week, you went out, did the Badwater 135. But what's fascinating is that you just didn't do it. You killed it, right? You're number 4 overall, which is amazing. Number 2 female. But hey, you know, I saw your finish times and not too far away from the number 1 finisher. So it's just quite amazing. And all this as a recreational athlete. You're not even a professional athlete. You're a recreational athlete and you're going out there and doing this amazing stuff. So obviously you got some gift in there. For a living, you're also a C-level executive working in the insurance industry, what I understand. So you're also a leader in the corporate world, originally from New Delhi, married, kids, all the good stuff. What did I miss?
I think you covered it perfectly. I'm impressed.
Okay, great. So, so Sonia, what we'll do is, I think, jump into a bit of a flashback, right? You know, where it all started, what got you into running? Why did you get into running, first off? So let's maybe jump in.
Absolutely. So Santosh, first of all, thank you so much for having me here. It's my pleasure to be able to speak with you and connect with many more through the forum you have created. This is amazing to have a forum like that. So really want to thank you for that. Just to give a little bit background, and maybe I'll tell a little story, right? Because some of people like me who are immigrants moved here from India have a little, you know, background on what happened in India. And then you come here and, you know, it shifts a little bit. But your foundation is still, like, I spent 25 years, as you said, grew up in New Delhi, you know, went schooling there. My first job there was with TCS. I'm sure some of you have heard the company name. And interesting part was, because it was 1999 when I graduated from college, that was the time when Y2K was such a big issue. So my first client was here, AIG Insurance, actually. That was my first client. So I ended up coming to United States right as soon as I got my master's in computers. So my really running, I wouldn't even call running, but my fitness journey started in India. You know, my parents were teachers. You know, teachers don't make a lot. At that time, they don't used to make that lot of money. So we would go for summer vacation and my dad would make me walk, right? You know, we would have to go for dinner somewhere to a restaurant. if it's 3 miles, you walk 3 miles. You had no option. There was no cabs, you know, no vehicles. We didn't want to spend money unnecessarily. So he would make me walk, basically, when I was 3-year-old, 5-year-old. And we would go literally every single year because as teachers, they got 2 months off. And, we as kids got school time off. We were just what outdoor people and we would walk for miles and miles. And that's kind of my recollection of maybe my base little bit started to build from that. But honestly, life gets so busy, especially when you're academic focused. Like I never thought of any close to running or any sports, I would say, when I was in India. There was just no time for that. Long story short, I moved to United States in around 2000, started working in New York at the time. And I did realize that I had more time, first time in my life, to do something beyond just, either studying or working. And I was always an outdoor person. So I started to kind of go for little jogs every evening or morning, depending on when I got time. So it's really started as a very casual, hey, I don't want to gain weight, so let me make sure I incorporate some kind of regime and, discipline about cardio activity. And I love running and I started to run. And what I noticed was that the more I ran, the more mental benefit I felt. So it wasn't like I was losing weight or I was maintaining weight. It also became, hey, I was bothered by this issue at work and I couldn't I couldn't really know how to solve. And then I went for a run. I suddenly found a solution for that, right? I was thinking much more clearly. And I learned that I was much a calmer person and I was a happier person, which also translated to how I conducted myself, not only in my business, but also as a mom or as a wife. To me, as soon as I kind of saw that connection, I decided there's no looking back, right? I mean, from here on, the journey is, okay, what more you can do and how you get better. But there was no looking back once I made that connection.
Yeah, that's well said. And I think most people who run would would resonate with you, because a lot of the benefit of running, while the obvious benefit of running, people relate to physical fitness. But I think that's far from truth. The bigger benefit is mental health. And you're right. You sort out your mind. You come back calmer. You come back in a better space. And usually the family is happier, right? And in fact, in my case, my wife, anytime I'm grumpy, she says, "Go out and run, go out and run." So it's kind of a benefit for them too, right?
Absolutely. And
makes sense.
On to that, I also then observed that I would come back happier, but there were times when I would come back from run and my adrenaline was so high that I almost would like to go for another run. And that's when my shift from like shorter runs to a little bit more endurance runs happened, because even I remember my first marathon, which wasn't that long ago. It was probably in 2014. I was just checking my kind of notes to make sure I got it right around that time. And I was just inspired by someone. I'm sure we all meet someone who said you can do a marathon. And someone said to me, it's like, you run this much, you totally can do a marathon. Why don't you just run a marathon? And I had never thought about it. I'm like, who's going to run 26 miles? And I was like, but I, as I said, I always wanted to see, okay, there's only moving forward for here. So what else can I do? I was already running 10-ish miles. So I said, okay, I'll put my name and, just do my training and hope for the best. So my first marathon I trained, went by a standard, marathon training plan. But what I learned was that when I came back from marathon, I was so happy and had that adrenal that actually I wouldn't just come and crash or just rest on sofa. I would actually end up doing more activity. So either I'll start making a, great Indian dish that I hadn't cooked in a long time, right? Or I'll go for shopping or sometimes even another run, to be honest. I didn't tell a lot of people I was doing that because it was like, okay, you don't run after you just finish a marathon. You recover, right? But I was cheating a little bit because I was just so addicted to that feeling that I would come back and, you know, in the evening, I'll go for another like a little jog or just, you know, recovery. And that just got my kind of, again, curiosity more on the lines of, okay, like what happens? Can I really run another 10 miles next day if I decide to? Like, you know, if I'm feeling fresh, like I listen to my body a lot. And and really then I started experimenting that. And I was actually amazed at how quickly my body adapted from saying, okay, 26 is a lot of distance to saying, oh, you can actually do 26. And you can actually do another 10 or 12 or 13 or 15 miles, whatever you decide. It might take a little bit built up period, but your body adapts based on what you incorporate, right? But you have to do it consistently. Obviously, you know that as an athlete, and there's some base that's required. So that's how kind of then my focus shifted from, okay, I can definitely do a marathon, but I think there's a more to be like just discovered here. And I think that got me to just test a few things, try, you know, a little bit different type of distances, mix and match and all that. But it was all fun. It was all recreational, as you said.
So what was your, did you have kids at that time? I guess you had a family at that time?
Yeah, when I ran my first marathon, I have a one girl. I believe she was like around 4 or 5. So my training was definitely filled with, you know, days when I had to come back home because she needed something, right? So I would typically plan my training runs around my home just because I wanted to be reachable. Even I remember when she was born, I would have a video camera right in her room, and I would just run around in the loop in our cul-de-sac. You know, there was times.
Nice.
But I think as moms, as parents, you just learn how to, you gotta do what you gotta do. For me, what was the important thing was I wanted to be a happier mom and a good mom. Mm. And I knew I needed to focus on myself. Even though it's very easy for us to get carried away by, you know, you're a mom and all your focus is your child. And absolutely, that was my focus. But I knew for me to be a happier and do a good job raising my kid, I needed to be a little bit invested in myself. And so I had to find that balance from the get-go. And definitely marathon training was a bit challenging from that perspective, but it's doable, absolutely doable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that's a great, there's a lot of gold in what you just said, especially the fact that, you know, how do you find hacks around your life constraints, right? You have a kid, you know, but hey, you have technology. You had some device that you used. You know, you used it. It made it work, right? And I mean, the reason I'm calling that out is because a lot of people get caught into their circumstance, and they're not able to do things that they want to do, right? So what you shared is very important because it's not like your life is all laid out just to go out and run. You know, you're making it work. You know, you're making an effort to work around your constraints and moving forward. That's quite amazing. And so I get it, right? So you started running, you did the marathon, you felt like you can do more. One of the side benefits of your running, obviously, which your husband must be very happy about, is the good dishes you cooked when you got back. So I get that. That probably made him to get you to go run more. But seriously speaking, I get that how your journey was scaling, right? Because you're beginning to do more. So is that when you kind of signed into your next ultra? Is that what happened?
Yeah, so that's an interesting part. So I ran my first 50 mile actually just a few years ago, I would say 2018, around that time frame, right before the COVID time. And for me, the shift was based on, as I said, I typically would have my marathon. And so just to give you a little bit from build up from there, right? I ran my first, did it very well. I think I did probably it was around 4 hours. So was happy with my performance overall. But I definitely wasn't like completely crushed by marathon. I would get up and I start, you know, next day I would definitely go for a jog. So then I became a part of a local running club here where I live. And typically they would go for like 10 to 15 mile runs on the weekend. So my marathon was sometimes followed by these local runs, right? So I'll do a marathon on Saturday. And then Sunday, I'll run with my local running group. So that started to build kind of that back-to-back, you know, long runs, as they say, in ultras, marathons. It's not very different from marathon training when I started reading about it. I think what's the difference is you have to increase the distance, right? You have to get used to like running on tired legs, as they call it. And it doesn't have to be in one stretch. So I learned that the impact of that training, whether you go for 10 hours run, is the same as if you break it down into two sections and you go for 3 hours, two runs, right? And that suddenly just had this light bulb on me. It's like, wow, I'm doing that anyway, right? I love to not skip my runs, you know, after a marathon. So if I can build my endurance level a bit more by having those consecutive runs, I think I can increase my distance without causing myself like injury or, you know, having a negative impact on my body. So I gradually started to do more consecutive runs on the weekend. And when I felt that I was actually ready to kind of take up a 50 miler challenge, my first ultra marathon was, I believe, 50 miler. And to be quite honest, it felt a little bit volume wise, I had to increase volume for training, but I would say it was not completely drastically different from a marathon training, right? So I think that's how I sort of like then made a shift to 50 mile, and then that gave me a boost saying, okay, what else? Like, you know, is that the distance you cap out, or what if I can increase the distance even more? And then I started to study a lot, like that, you know, you obviously, you know, your body, but you also, you know, have to make sure that you do it in a way that you're not getting injured. So, you know, then I researched, I learned what other ultra athletes was doing. And I started to, in my mind, like frame my own plan on how I'm going to go from like 50 mile to like 100K or 100 mile. And as we all know, COVID happened. And suddenly I find myself not traveling anymore. You know, I used to spend a lot of time just like you, traveling for my job. So I had all this time now. I was like, this is exactly perfect timing for me to, you know, spend that extra time in building endurance or strength. So I would say 2018, 19, 20, those were my 2-3 years when I built the base for ultras. And then I started to sign up for 100-mile races just to see how I do. I would say I'm still not a very much a race person. Like I probably have done much more longer distances runs than my ultra sign up reflects. Just because I just you know, for me, race is just a event, right? I run for my happiness. I'm sure many of us do for our own sake. So yeah, I started to increase my mileage quite a bit. And sometimes I'll do like 2 runs in a day, morning and evening, depending on the time. But my body was adapting and I was feeling really good about that.
Nice. Awesome. So one thing I missed asking you was your first marathon. Where did you do it? Was it in the Bay Area as well?
Yeah. So I live in Southern California. So my first marathon was San Diego Rock and Roll.
Okay. And your first 50 miler, the one that you talked about, where was that?
That was also in Southern California. It's an Avalon 50 miler. It's actually in Catalina Island, one of the most beautiful courses I've ever ran. So I would definitely recommend for anyone who is considering. So yeah, both races were local, you know, and had fun time. Actually, after 50 mile, I immediately started to look at 100K. And then I signed up for 100K. That was in Northern California, somewhere around Sacramento. And then I just few days before the run, I upgraded 100K to 100 miler. That's what how it happened. And I just felt confident that I said, okay, like, you know, there's not much difference, honestly, but I have to stay awake past my bedtime anyway. So it's like, might rather just do it a 24 hours run than just doing an 18 hours run, right? So I kind of think more in terms of not mileage, but more like what would it take from a cycle standpoint. So when I upgraded, you know, I was ready to back off. I needed to, like, but I at 100K stop, I still had energy left, and physically I was doing well. So I was like, might just finish my first 100 miler and see how I do. And I mean, I surprised myself. I finished and felt great. And, you know, yeah, I had blisters and, you know, all those common issues that happen. But I would say all in all, you know, I felt that I had built the base. So I was ready to do that distance.
Nice. And one thing I do notice in your story so far is, you know, you don't seem to settle. You know, you're like, okay, I've done this. I'm feeling good. Why not push? Is that how you are? Is that how you are in general everywhere in your life?
Yeah, I think you noticed something that I would say is who I am as a person. I whether it's my corporate life, my career, my personal life, right, or my running, I definitely is the one. I'm not just, you know, some people would call it ambitious and you know, sure. But I think for me, it's more about discovering your own self, right? Mm-hmm. Getting that satisfaction from pushing yourself out of the comfort zone. In fact, we were just having discussion with my running friends and they were saying, you know, what's next for you? And I said, I haven't decided what next, but I will say that I have to think about what is the one thing that will, someone will say, I don't think you can do it. And I would then say, no, actually I can, you know, and then it's a matter of how can I, right? Because instead of saying I cannot, I will say, how can I? And whatever that is, whether that's summiting Mount Everest or running a 200 miler, I don't know, but I'm sure there's one thing that I would like to say, okay, I'm not sure how to do it, but I'm sure if I put my mind, I just have to research a little bit more and study and then do it. And so, yeah, I think you're right. I just find pleasure in doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. So how did you pick it up? I mean, what got you to be someone? And the reason I'm asking this is, I think so. That's a great attitude, right? It's serving you for sure, right? It's a mindset, attitude, whatever you want to call it, or a value system, seems to be serving you overall. A lot of folks who struggle with that, because a lot of folks, competent folks, whether it is a running journey or whatever else they want to take on, struggle with that mindset of, hey, you know, I can do more with myself, right? So where did you get that? Where did you pick it up? Is that your, where you grew up? Did you read something? Did somebody inspire you? What was going on there?
Yeah, it's a great question, actually. I would say, you know, as a kid growing up in, again, it goes back to your upbringing maybe a little bit, right? You grew up in, you know, Delhi, sure, you know, that's a capital of India. But the part of the Delhi where I grew up, West Delhi, was still very, I would say for girls, it was not very easy to have the access to whether it's gym or in general, like be able to have the equal kind of footing as men. It was a little bit challenging. So what I started to observe was during my childhood, I had this sudden desire to prove that actually a woman can do what men can do. And it was, I never said it loud, but, you know, as a kid, when you know, people were comparing, oh, girls shouldn't be doing that. I was never comfortable with that kind of position, and would do things just to prove to people that, no, actually a girl can, you know. So I think that gave me a bit of, I would go like, fire in my belly to, you know, that's something that inspired me to say, okay, you know, there's a why behind it, as we call it, you know. So and that I apply, I find myself, that got me into, like you said, I'm C-level executive, you know. I didn't settle for then a manager job, you know. I said, no, I should be able to manage the P&L of the company. And then I said, no, I should be able to grow the company 10 times, right? So I always, behind, in back of my mind, proving that actually someone who grew up in a very small town with very limited, you know, things available, resources available, can still, with focus and determination, you know, and some planning, overcome that and do what, you know, most people would typically will do, right? And I think that's who defines what defined my running journey as well. So I always had this desire to say, okay, you know, people think you're a man can do a Western state course in, you know, 20 some hours, or a woman can't. I mean, we just saw Courtney Walter, right? A couple of weeks ago, killed it. So I think I just feel that to me, the bigger message or agenda, I would say, is proving to the world that a woman, Asian, non-Asian, doesn't matter, Indian, can do it. We just have to have, again, some foundation and determination and consistency, but it can be done.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And absolutely. I think you that's so much depth in what you shared. And I think what I'm hearing there is also the vision that you created for yourself way back, that I'm not someone who's going to be, you know, stop with constraints. I'm going to go push and achieve big things. And that's very important, right? Because once you have that vision, then you'll find the means to fulfill on what you want to do, right? The other thing that triggered off in my mind is there's this book called Upshift that I recently read. And, you know, in that, this guy, actually, the author talks about, he's a Sri Lankan author, you know, Ben Ramalingam, you can look him up. And he talks about typical responses to, you know, threats, right? Or difficult situations. Either you can respond it from a point of view of a threat, or you can respond it from a point of view of a challenge. And when you respond it from a point of view of a challenge, there's growth available. And that's what your story is, a classic example of that, right? You lived in a particular part of Delhi. It was not the best place necessarily from an opportunity perspective for girls. But you didn't see that as a threat and say, oh my gosh, I'm going to get depressed or, you know, go in a shell. But you found ways to, you know, to get ahead. So just wanted to call that out, because a lot of folks, I'm sure, will find gold in that part of what you've done. Great. So coming back to your running journey again. So you went out, you did the first 100 miler, and then I know you also mentioned that you've done a lot more running than what the ultra sign up shows. Absolutely. I'm sure of that, because in the way your results are showing. But you won the Miami, Florida 100 miler. Tell us a little bit about that. How did that happen, and how did you feel about it?
So actually, I have done, just to give you a kind of a broader picture of my ultra running, I'm a fairly new ultra runner. As I said, I started like during COVID time. I have run 4 ultras, out of which 3 I actually ended up winning. So I won Miami 100 as an overall winner. I went to Brazil and ran 135 mile and ended up winning that. And I believe I was also the fastest female on the course. So I broke the course record for Brazil 135 as female. And then I ended up obviously recently at Badwater, you know, being the top second finisher in women as well. And I will tell you, in all these races, I never went knowing that, one, I could do it. Secondly, I had no plan to finish at the podium. I just knew one thing, that when I go and show up at the start line, I'm going to just put my best. I'm not the one who keeps a lot of gas in the tank. It's just my personality. So when I go, obviously you have to be practical about it, and you have to be smart about like what pace you can run. But as you said, I find pleasure in challenging myself and kind of saying, okay, what is possible? So I still remember Miami 100, talking about that in particular. First of all, very hot and humid race, right? So a lot of people had cautioned me, like, this is not your typical early race you pick. It's one of the tougher ones. So you know, watch for it. This is going to be a challenging one, right? The DNF rate, which is the people who do not finish, is pretty high in that race. So but I you know, I was getting a lot of kind of assurance that when people say you can't do it, I start to say, okay, how can I, right? So I was like, okay, so what would it take for me to finish it? Not only finish it, but finish it strong. And I read about like nutrition and hydration and electrolytes. And, you know, so I had gathered a lot of kind of information through my research. I talked to people who had finished. Actually, I called the last year finisher who was also the champion and said, you know, what was your secret? Like, how did you kill it? So I got a lot of tips and, you know, advice from a lot of people who have supported me in my career journey. So yeah, I kind of followed some of those practices. You know, nutrition was a big shift I had to make. I was much more, you know, watching my hydration and how much electrolytes I was taking. And then when I showed up at the start line, it was like, okay, I'm just gonna do my best. I had no expectation for any time, except that I wanted to obviously finish and not quit. And that's because I had by that time put a thought of Badwater in my mind. And Badwater, just so that you know, there are three ultras you have to do before you can even apply. So I needed those three on my ultra sign up, you know, resume, just to show the committee, selection committee, that I've done these and then successfully. So a bit of my push to do the best was I knew that someone would be reading my application, right? It's like applying to colleges. Mm. You know, you want to have your highest, you know, GMAT score or whatever, right? So I had a desire to say, okay, I'll just do my best, and whatever the result is, hopefully it's good enough that I can prove to them that I can actually run an ultra. I was actually really surprised when I reached the finish line and they told me, you're the first one. And the guy didn't even believe, because I believe I was right after the course record breaker time or something. So I not only I was the first finisher overall amongst men and women, I actually was very, very close to the course record time. And I processed it then, right? I said, what did I do? I didn't really go and saying I'm gonna be the first. So what really happened, right, that actually helped me perform that to my best? And I would say it became, one, it was self-confidence, right? I don't settle for less. I just said, keep pushing. But I think second was, I am generally very happy person when I'm running, right? So I didn't look at my Garmin. I just didn't look at my any of my pace. I remember just categorically, I was just passing these Miami street. It was all on the Miami, like downtown, and taking from different beautiful places in Miami. And I was talking to strangers when I was like passing them, right? Like I was dancing and just laughing and exchanging quick notes and just having a blast. And so when you reach the finish line, I am almost like disappointed. I'm like, oh, that it's over. Like, you know, I was having so much fun doing this. So then I always analyze, right, what goes well and what doesn't with any of my things. And I said, okay, what actually did go well is I didn't care about the pace or any number. I just had fun. And if I can continue to just adopt that as a practice, maybe there's something there. And I repeated this in Brazil, exact same thing. Showed up at Brazil, almost kept my Garmin on the side, didn't even bother to look at it. Just took the course and in the spirit of enjoy the beauty, the scenery, the culture, and found myself being the first person on the finish line again.
Wow, congratulations. Thank you. Was the Brazil one also a road race, or was it a trail race?
It was mixed, but mostly it was very interesting. So there's a pilgrimage route, mostly on the trails. But then this route goes through different towns, small villages and towns in Brazil. So when the town comes, then you are on the concrete road, cobblestone, stone. In fact, those sections could be very challenging. But then once you're off the town, you again go to the dirt road. So it was a really good mix of both trail and the roads.
Lovely. And obviously, you know, I know you said you were enjoying it and the results just showed and you didn't necessarily expect it. But obviously, there's a gift in there, right? There's an ability that you're discovering, right? Because it's not like everybody is going out there and creating course records or being able to hit certain pace. So how did you feel about that? Hey, you know, there's something in here that I haven't ever known about as an athletic capability, right? I mean, it's a capability that you're discovering also. How did you feel about that?
Yeah, I would say, you know, there is athletic capability, but I would say you said something which I'm going to bring it back. There's also a bit why should I get a podium? Like why that extra push, right? So I think sometimes what I observe is, you know, and I will be frank here, right? You know, I'm a 5 feet, you know, petite woman, right? I still observe sometimes I go to a pre-race meeting, even Badwater, I went to a pre-race meeting and people were looking around my crew, like we had to have, so there are five people, right? Four of my crew and one runner. And typically they look at this tall guy in my team and assume that he's the runner and I'm crewing. So when he said, hey, who's the runner here? And I said, actually, I'm the runner. So they're like, oh, so you get this look. Like they look at it like, oh, she's the runner. She's the one who's going to run this 135 mile course. And so for me, when I see that gives me just this extra fire. Like, I got to show him size doesn't matter. This doesn't, my look doesn't matter.
Yeah, you messed with the wrong person.
So as soon as he said that, oh, you are the runner, I thought he was the runner. I said, oh, okay, you just got me started now. So when I showed him the start line, believe me or not, that was still in the back of my mind. I'm like, these people think that a small woman or look someone who looks small can't really run. Like, it's like, come on, you know. So I just, you know, started to like push myself to just, wow, one, prove to myself that I can do it. But then secondly, there was a bit of, I wouldn't call showing off, but sending a message to broader community that, as I said, if you decide to do it and you have dedication and focus, right, you actually can. You have to be thoughtful, and there is a bit of like consistency and foundation building that's needed to do any of those things. But for me, yeah, that there was definitely that extra excitement to be able to just do things that people would generally assume that you couldn't, you know. So that gets me going.
That's great. And it's great. And it's also, what's great also is that you're aware of it. And you can use it to your advantage, right? It's, you know, one is for someone to be acting unaware, you know, unconscious, just doing something and, you know, why did I do it? But also for another is to be aware of what gets you going and use it, you know. Not necessarily be used by it, but use it to serve your goals and your purpose. Awesome. So coming to the event last week, the Badwater 135, right? So tell us about that. How was it for you? You know, highlights, lowlights. How did it go?
Yeah. So my Badwater story started last year, actually. Unlike a lot of people who were so much aware or are aware of Badwater, like there's so much awareness about this event. I interestingly had not heard about Badwater until last year. So last year, actually my house where I live in Southern California, we are 4 hours away from Lone Pine, where the race actually almost finishes. So I remembered hearing about this race last year. And then what happened was with me, I got curious. I saw some videos and it looked like, you know, this big deal, right? People were saying, oh my gosh, the toughest foot race on the planet. So it was like, wow, what that means? Like, so I started become very curious. I did like a Google search and Wikipedia. I still remember, you know, if you go to Wikipedia and you'll see like they have listed the winners and who have participated. I think there was a link which I found which said, who all have participated in this race from the inception. I mean, this is such a kind of high prestigious race that, you know, there's a lot of discussion about who has, there are not many people who have successfully completed this. even though this race has been existent for a very long time. So when I was going through the list, I just didn't see India represented. You know, there were few people now who have completed it, and I learned a lot, by the way. So kudos to those people who were ahead of me and obviously took that challenge and successfully finished it. But then I started looking at, and there are all these countries, Western countries represented, right? And I didn't see many South Asian countries represented. So that gave me, first of all, that gave me a little bit, more spiritual reason or more kind of why around, like why I should even think about this. So it didn't take me a very long time from just reading that results to saying, okay, I think this got to be on my plan, because I think we deserve to, show and just be more present, like as coming from an Asian country to do things that probably we haven't tried. So that gave me a reason. Then I started doing research and called the race director, learned that the qualification criteria was really tough. He almost said that, forget it, you're too new to the ultra. It will take you a few years to get ready for this. So give it a few years and, come up, develop your resume. And I generally don't like that answer, because for me, the answer was, okay, what do I need to do? Like give more, kind of be more specific. So what I learned was you had to do 300 miles, right? That was minimum criteria. And then there was some bit of requirement of, you needed to have a good pacing and you had to come to the course and pace it or work. Like there's a lot of people work multiple years as staff in this race or pace or crew, because the race director wants you to experience what this, running in heat looks like. There are some extreme conditions in this race, which it's very hard to just read and, get prepared about it. You have to almost experience it, right? Now, there was one exception, which was a fine print on the website, which said the winner of Brazil 135, or there were a couple of other races, have a direct entry into bad water. So as soon as I read that, I'm like, if there's any way for me to do bad water next year or coming year, it's gonna be this, because there's no way I can get all these experiences I just had this honestly just this push to do it sooner than later, because it just got me so excited to think that, finally an Indian woman can actually complete a race like that. So I did exactly that. I just, went with I went with to Brazil saying I'm going to do my best. But I knew back of my mind that winning Brazil will actually give me a direct entry to Badwater. And I think that probably helped me get through my pain cave when I was having issues in Brazil and it's like, oh my gosh, time to slow down or stop. I remembered what I've come here for and I didn't slow down. So when I finished this race and reached the finish line, I still remember the race director of Brazil said, he told me my time. He told me all these kind of credentials, right? I was not even listening. This just was one sentence I remember. He said, now you are going to be running bad water in 2023. And I said, oh, okay, that's exactly what I needed to hear. So I came back to US, as soon as I came back, I called now the bad water race director, Chris Kosman, obviously a good friend of mine, I can say now, lives very close to where I live. And said, hey, guess what? I just won Brazil. So tell me, what do I need to do now? And it was obvious at that point that I was going to be running bad water. So from there, then it was now, okay, I knew now I was going to run bad water, right? Part of that, actually, that was the first time probably I felt nervous, to be quite honest, because this was a big jump for someone like me who had just done 3 ultras officially, at least. And then so say, okay, now you're going to do the toughest routes on the planet, which has extreme heat conditions. You're crossing 3 mountain ranges, all asphalt, right? I mean, the best of the best athletes sometimes can't finish that race. So what am I thinking here? Like, how am I going to get prepared for this? And you have 5 months from the time you finish Brazil, which was January of 2023 to July, you don't even have 6 months to train. And this is a big jump, right? So I immediately started to, as I came back, you know, start to put my plan together, you know, talk to tons of people, considered hiring a coach. I ended up not. But I would advise if someone was considering that, this would be a race where I would say, yeah, get someone who's experienced in this, because it had its own unique nuances that you had to plan and train for. And I did that just by talking to people. And I just, again, the point which I went in with the mindset was to do the best, right? I said, if I've done, you know, heat training, I did my hill training, I built my base, I did by some speed things. And so I had 5-7 things I had identified that I needed to really do before I say I was ready to run. And I was a bit more methodical this time about making sure that every, whether it's every week or sometimes life get busy, every week is not the same, right? But at least on a monthly basis, if you break down 5 months plan, I was checking the box and making sure I didn't take anything for granted, because the cost or the implication of taking things for granted, this was huge, right? Not only you're not finished, but you know, you can get heat issues and you can have extreme medical problems. So I had to take this one very like methodically, seriously, like, you know, make sure I was ready for that. And I did, I think, a lot of that. And it was start line again. And I said, okay, I gotta feel confident. I've done my homework. Mm. I did my, you know, put my hard work. And now it's execution, right? Now you have like... Yeah. You know, day or 2 days of being on the course and just have fun and just have confidence in you that you did everything, and problems will come, we'll just solve and we'll just keep running. And so, yeah, that was my attitude, and that's what happened.
Beautiful. So zooming in a little bit about you talked about a methodical approach to training for this event, right? So what, if you want to pick the top three, right? What you may have implemented in preparing for something like this, like, for example, heat and, you know, some of those issues that Badwater is infamous for. How did you prepare? What did you specifically do to get ready for those?
Yeah, I would say I had identified 3 to 5 things that were needed to happen for me to feel confident I was ready. The first one I would say was building a higher base. So although I had done 100 milers, this one was all asphalt. It's a completely, you're running on the road for all 135 miles. And it's hard on our joints, as we know, right? So there's a lot of pounding. So for me to feel confident that I can do it and do it consistently for 135 miles and not have to stop or give up, I needed to increase my volume further. So I started to incorporate 2 times in a day runs, because there's no way I can, with the work, I could go for, you know, 4 or 5 hours run in a day. So I would typically go in the morning, and then I would reserve some time in the evening. So that to me was something I had to do just for this race. But I enjoyed it.
How many miles were you doing? How many miles were you running? Per week.
Well, I had planned to go increase my mileage gradually, because, you know, as we all say, like, don't increase, you're not supposed to increase more than 10% or whatever that percentage is. So I had, when I started to put my plan together, I had recognized that I would increase my mileage like by 10 to 15% every week. But then I maxed out at over 100 miles weeks, at least for a month. Mm-hmm. So I did like 4 weeks of over 100 miles, which means that if you sort of boil down to the daily schedule, I was running over 15 miles a day sometimes. My peak week, I was running 15 miles a day every day, except the recovery days, obviously. And so I had to break it down into kind of the morning and the evening workout. But then I also learned that it actually was helpful to break it down, because I could come back during lunchtime when I'm in meetings. I would put my icing pads on, or I would put my compression boots. So gave me a time to recover a little bit so that when you go in the evening, you're not completely like taking the risk of injury. So once I kind of go out into a rhythm a little bit, I felt comfortable that, you know, a few months of that training was totally doable by breaking it down. So that was one. I would say the second one was hydration. You know, this is the driest weather condition. I mean, the temperature got 126 was the highest I saw in the my Garmin watch. But I think people generally say this asphalt temperature is 10 to 15 degrees even higher than what your watch captures. So and you could feel that in your shoes, like you could just feel the heat part, right? So the what is important is then to keep yourself hydrated. So for me, I had to learn not only to force myself to make sure that I adopt, you know, drinking enough water as my regular practice, but then also pay a lot more attention to electrolytes. A lot of us runners, you know, are very comfortable with taking electrolytes, right? Through pills, salt pills and all that. But then I also started to change my nutrition to make sure I was taking, like, you know, vegetables and fruits with sodium and potassium and, you know, calcium. And so a lot of nutrition changes, I would say, you know, electrolytes was a big part. And then the last part, which typically you do towards the end of this, is your heat training. You know, you had to get used to running in the heat in that dry weather. So I would go into sauna, sit there for 40 minutes and sometimes do my yoga, or sometimes, you know, I would read book. But a lot of times I decided to actually be a bit more active in the sauna room just to get my body used to not giving up in that heat condition, but being able to like operate. And if you read about bad water runners, you know, everyone adopts, you know, some variation of that. So for me, what worked was, you know, keeping myself active in the sauna room and adopting that as a standard training practice.
Makes sense. On the third part, on a lighter note, you know, if you're living in Houston, Texas, you just have to run in the summer and you're ready for bad water.
Yeah, that is true.
It's humid, it's hot. So I'm kind of thinking, why aren't more Houston runners doing bad water? It's natural.
I was just gonna extension say that. You guys are much more than would be successful at doing bad water than I
yeah.
was.
yeah, absolutely. No, terrific. Those are great tips for someone who wants to train in a methodical fashion for any race, especially something as challenging and it's very race-specific training that one has to look at. Awesome. And so how did it, so obviously you did well, right? You know, while you went into this race with a bit of nervousness and trepidation, but you went and conquered it. How did that feel for you?
It felt great, I have to be honest. I had actually... I missed my own goal by an hour. This is not many people know about this, because result of 25 hours still seems pretty kind of good, just if you look from overall, you know, averages and what has been accomplished in this course. But quite honest, you know, I was shooting for sub 24 hours, and I had did my calculation that, you know, if you break a 135 course, it's like you're doing 5 marathons, right? So I said, okay, what's the first marathon course look like? You know, you said, okay, I can do 4 hours. I'm just kind of using as an example, right? Second marathon, I can do 4.5. So when I started to add up, and that's what kind of, a lot of time, I would just digress for a little bit, one second. A lot of time, I think we all settle for a lower bar. Right? Someone could easily go to the start line or plan and say, okay, my goal is to just finish, because obviously that itself is a very big accomplishment. And I know, taking away from people, I mean, I have huge respect for those people who finish along with my side, right? No matter what time. But my mindset was a little bit saying, okay, what would be a good challenge for me personally? And it has nothing to do with where other athletes finish or what the podium finish time. It all had to do with what would challenge me so that I can say, oh, I actually pushed myself a bit more. So I had come up with the time, and it was kind of adding up to around 24, 25-ish, I would say. So yeah, I went in the win at the start line with the mindset that hopefully that time is what I can kind of keep in back of my mind. I don't look at Garmin when I run, but I did this time had certain expectation of when I finished my first and second and third, like overall. And I remember when I was running, I just told my crew, one of my crew members who is really good, Marty, you know, Japanese woman, really good runner. I said, just tell me at each, when I finish a marathon, like what time I took, so that I just have some frame of reference, right? Am I okay? Am I like too slow, too fast? Just more curiosity. And every time I would finish my first marathon, she said, oh, you have 15 minutes in your bank. Like you just did 15 minutes sooner than even your best case. I had done best case scenario and worst case scenario planning. I mean, I went a little bit too analytical on this one. And it was more to help crew so that they know what my needs would be at certain point in the day, right? Because your course is changing from starting in the night to day and then mountain to desert. And so for them to anticipate when will I need, you know, electrolytes or when would I need my breakfast, or I had to give them some estimate of, you know, where I would be in the course based on my own assessment of my body. And so that led me to have certain like targets. And when I started to hear from them that my first marathon, I was way ahead of my best case scenario. I'm like, wow. It didn't feel even like I was pushing. Like it felt like I was having fun. So I finished my second marathon and I think she said, oh, you finished, I think 20, 30 minutes sooner than your plan said. So you're way ahead, you know. And then I had like, I was almost halfway done. It's like, wow, like I think I have a chance here, right? So during the race, I started to then tell my crew, I said, okay, just keep telling me this because it's helping me right now. You know, I want to know how I'm tracking because it's giving me some perspective of how I can finish. And yeah, so I think I remember last section, if you look at the course, that's when the huge climb begins from Lone Pine to Whitney Portal. And there were 13 miles left. And they told me, I think, they said I was side by side for the first female finisher, Ashley Paulson, who's a great, great athlete. And I almost felt like, I was like, wow, I couldn't believe it. But once they told us, it was just this desire to just continue pushing so that I can finish strong and you know, just see where I end up. You know, when I reached finish line, I learned I was actually the second woman to finish.
Amazing. So, you know, it's interesting, right? you did well, but at the same time, from a point of view of what you were aiming for, you fell short. And how did you deal with that? I mean, are you someone who moves on quickly, or are you kind of, I did well, but I didn't deliver on what I wanted to? How do you deal with something like that?
Yeah, I think I took it with the spirit of I learned so much. First of all, this event was just an event. I'm almost sad the race is over because it's almost like my learning, like from you know, learning about heat training, heat acclimatization, nutrition. I was learning and growing so much, and I was enjoying that process. So this little hiccup happened, what happened was in Lone Pine, there was a diversion in the course. So you had to sit in the car for 15 minutes and be dropped from point A to point B because there was flooding in that area. Now, we all knew that going into that. That was part of the plan. And the race director and the staff had done a really good job telling all the runners and the crew this was how to manage that. But what I didn't anticipate is what your body can go through when 15 minutes, you've been running for like, think about that, 20 hours, and now you suddenly stop, right? And then you have to start your run again. So then I think it was, to be exact, it was 20 minutes in the car. So that 20 minutes, I underestimated kind of what, I didn't think about more like what can I do in those 20 minutes so that when I get off the car, I have to start running hills now. I'm actually at my best. So what I ended up doing was learning. I would not advise anyone to do that. I ended up icing my legs and thinking that this is actually will help me kind of with the soreness. But the reality is it completely I was cold right after that. I started running after that, I didn't had enough time to warm up because I was just full of adrenaline and rush and all those things. And it's just your brain doesn't work when you run that long, right? You're just not thinking very clearly. So I missed that part. So as soon as I got out of the car, I started running really fast. And there's some shock my system got. I absolutely, my knee gave up completely. So, I almost fell down twice. And then I realized that as soon as I was getting up, my body just wasn't ready to run. And I almost went, first I didn't accept it. I was like, how can this happen to me? Like, this is completely not what I trained for. This can't be true. Like, I'm stronger than that, right? All these negative feeling comes to you. But then I looked at my watch and I said, okay, it is what it is. Like, you have to just, there are 13 miles between you and finish line now, and you're still the second lead woman right now. And people are not nowhere to be even seen. When I turned around, I couldn't even see another, anyone close to me. So then in my mind was, okay, I just somehow get to the finish line. I knew that I would come back and look at this and say, okay, I'd learned something here. I didn't do something right. I didn't know what it was, but I knew that it is actually more on me than the conditions. But so I took that as a learning spirit. And those 13 miles was, I have to be honest, were way more challenging. I added two more hours due to that slow walk. I ended up walking the rest of the 13 miles as opposed to running. I still feel I could finish that race in 2 hours less. So that will always stay in my head, unfortunately. But maybe that will give me my next fire now, right? To go out do something again. But then I came back. Then I talked to my crew. By the way, this race cannot be done successfully if you don't have a good crew team. So I want to recognize my crew. Ali, Brian, Marcelo, Marty. Those were the four people who ran with who helped me kind of get through this. So then we looked at what happened and we were able to identify the issue. But sometimes some of these things you just learn when there's no way I could have learned this from reading a book. Like you had to experience it to learn. I would say, now I know what to do next when something like that happens.
Beautiful. Amazing. Again, Artie, congratulations. If you didn't know this part of your plan, it's a great finish. It's fantastic. I mean, really, thank you for what you do and all the limits that you're pushing, so others can get inspired and maybe we'll see more, Indian origin women out there doing more Badwater. Today it looks, when you talk to somebody, the Badwater, oh my gosh, that's I can't do that, right? But amazing. Thank you. Awesome. So, I think we covered a significant amount of ground in terms of your journey so far and, the person behind the athlete. And we can pivot a little bit into, I know we covered a lot of your what's working for you and what you've learned. And if there's something that we may have not missed, maybe we can pivot into your top 3 or 5 practices that's working for you that you would want to kind of share with the listeners.
Sure, absolutely. So I think we already covered about nutrition, hydration. I think the importance of that connection of what you put in your body to like how your body performs. I started to believe more and more in that as I was experimenting. I mean, I'm a person who learns from doing, as I said. So I was, changing my diets. I would observe the impact of that on running and my pace. I started to make some adjustments. So just small refinements. I was never a junkie person. I typically like love to cook and you know, go for more like whole foods, you know, and not a big on processed food. But even within that, I start to like experiment a little bit more on, you know, what happened if I quit cheese, you know, like we sometimes I feel like, you know, I was culprit of having a lot more wine and cheese kind of is my, you know, weak point. So I would enjoy those more than I probably should have. So I started cutting down those things in my life, right? I reduced caffeine quite a bit because I was concerned about hydration. And I started to see the impact of my run. It was really helping me perform better. So those things are obviously, you know, goes without saying, as you increase the distance or go for bigger things, I really believe that paying attention to that and kind of refining that would help. I would say the one which I didn't cover so far is the core, you know, the strong core or the strength training, right? I was already doing strength training for, you know, as long as I've been running, you know, a couple of times a week. But this time I started to do a lot more yoga because I was concerned I didn't want to get injured as I was doing a lot more running on these hard pavement that can be so brutal to your joints and body. So I had to, you know, incorporate a lot of stretching, which meant for me, the easiest way was go to a yoga class or put a 40 minutes, you know, a YouTube video and just do it at home. So I would say that that has become now a very foundational part of building that base for solid running. And the other one is, I would say, just having fun. I always envision, you know, I use this visual effect, right, of how you motivate when you go through a downtime or even to say, okay, like, why am I doing that? And I always have either some big celebrity even at the finish line or you know, I'm a beer person, right, like IPA. So I would envision myself with the beer, having fun time with my friends. So for me, that is also very important. You know, when you work hard, you play hard. So adopting that as a standard practice and having people who I run with, all my best friends, they're all my best friends now. I had a great crew team, especially at Badwater. Like we, you know, they were with me all the time following me, right? That's how the race kind of the format is because there are no aid stations. So they had to carry my food, my ice. So the ground rule I established was whether we finish or not, whether we win or not, we just have fun. This has to be our most memorable time ever spent together. And so I do believe that that really helps me. It gives me something to look forward to. So you know, there's a spiritual and have fun part. There's a nutrition, hydration, I would say, is one bucket I would put. And the third is like core and your, you know, whether you do yoga or some kind of resistance training, making sure your body can actually take that much volume, you know, you get your core strengthened.
Yeah, makes sense. No, those are great, great three tips in addition to all the other, you know, behind the scenes that goes behind someone like you who makes it work, right? And especially, I think this whole thing about attitude and, you know, the challenge mindset that you developed, you know, is very valuable to reflect on and see how one all of us can take that on. You know, I think that and the vision part, right? The fact that you're constantly looking at what's the next peak I want to conquer, and you see yourself there, you visualize yourself there. All that are great tips and practices and principles that one can take away from your journey. Awesome. So what's next? I know you said you've not yet, nothing on the table yet, but is there something cooking in the background in terms of what might be what next?
Yeah, I think first I'm going to take a little bit break and as I said, just enjoy, you know, that will help me kind of feel more fresh. I feel I haven't decided exactly. I haven't signed up any races. There's no big races that I've signed up for the rest of the year or year after. I do have a desire to just learn more that what distance can more be covered. So either I would do a longer races like 200 plus and see what that looks like. I also think that mountaineering is something that I really enjoy. Mm-hmm. I'm in Southern California. There are beautiful mountains here. So I would say some combination of that is probably, would make me kind of feel challenged. Heard a lot about UTMB. I've been following that. I've been following Western States, especially that's actually, closer to where I am right now. So I would say maybe some one of those. But as I said, I'm taking it easy for now. I would say that I would continue to read and research and learn. That to me is something I really enjoyed as part of this process. So as long as there's that element that I can continue and maintain, I'm sure the event is an event and I'll come up with something. I will let you know when I decide. But yeah, I haven't signed up anything yet.
Got it. So you should, my guess is you probably get into Western States in the lottery, right? You based on your past performances, you would probably qualify by default, isn't it?
I think there's a golden entry. There are certain races you have to do. So I haven't, as you can tell, okay. I haven't even done that research yet. But I did, there's a lottery system and I think you keep applying. So I did apply last year for Western States. I didn't get in. But I'm glad I didn't get in because that's the same year I ended up then getting into Badwater. So there's no way I would have been able to do both. But yeah, maybe it will be a Western. That's definitely a race that I've always admired. I always followed. So if I get in, I would consider myself lucky and who knows, and go with, as I've always gone with a good spirit. And yeah, something I'm going to look forward to.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll do well. So. Terrific. Hey, so, the last part of my conversation is a fun Q&A round that I have with my guests. So you ready for that?
Not really, but okay, I'm ready.
So I know we talked about food. One of my favorite questions that I have for all my guests is, what's your favorite junk food, something that you like to indulge in?
I think I already threw that out. I usually would say I'm not a very big on junk food because I love to cook and I like to claim that I'm a better cook than a lot of restaurants can cook. So for that reason, I just generally end up cooking as opposed to eating out even sometimes. But I would say I do have my weak points and things that I look forward to. And one of them is really, it's all, for me, it's all liquid calories. It's my IPA beer and my wine, red IPA. Wine, spending in California.
Right, cheese and wine.
And anything that goes well with that, is probably my reward at the end of the race,
I wouldn't put it in a junk food anyway. IPAs and wine, with moderation, they have their benefits. But yeah, I get what you're saying. Maybe the cheese part is a junk part.
Yeah.
Exactly. A dish, a food dish that you detest.
That is a challenging one. I would say, growing up in India and eating Indian food for most part, right? I think the one that I don't enjoy sometimes is, I'm a Punjabi and we, have a lot of, fried foods, right? That we adopt, puri and all that. Now, I know a lot of people probably look forward to it. For me, I make it because it's part of my tradition and I want to maintain some of those cultural, traditions. But I really don't look forward to that food anymore. So right. I'm one of those unpopular maybe answer here. Some of you may not appreciate that. I would say that I cook it, I give it to my family. And then you'll find sometimes I'll just turn around and make my oatmeal and I'll eat, eat my own food. So that would be, that's something that I don't eat as much as I used to.
Right, yeah, got it. Well, if you're performing at your level of, peak right now, that's perfectly understandable. All right. What's your favorite way to spend a lazy day, when you're not running and training?
Yeah, I love to I love camping and just backpacking. So for me, I can sit in a backyard or just wilderness, by the fire and have a good glass of wine and just good company and good food. And yeah, I look forward to that. Actually, I might do that later this evening.
Nice. Awesome. What's been the worst? Let me switch on that. What's the best compliment you got about your ultra lifestyle?
I would say the best compliment I consider is, as I said, you're not able to see me because I'm on camera right now. I'm probably not even 5 feet, if I have to be honest. So I say 5 feet, but I round it up a little bit. So I think the compliment, or at least I consider this as a compliment, is when people look at my size, right? And they look at it's not a typical athletic body, but I can when I have things we move around in our house, right? When we are kind of doing some remodeling or anything, I can actually lift more weight sometimes than my husband, by the way, or I would be able to go much longer distance than many of those big men, right? And
Absolutely.
then people in the end say, "Oh my gosh, I didn't think looking at your size you could do it." I take that as a compliment.
Nice. That's amazing. That's amazing. And what's been the worst criticism you ever received for your lifestyle?
Too much running, maybe. I think the worst criticism is I can. Based on, again, I always say, what is your biggest strength is your biggest weakness too. It's like if you overdo it, it becomes your weakness, right? So there are times I would say my biggest strength, which is right, this focus, right? If I decide something, I have to do it. Like there's nothing that can stop me. I mean, you can throw problems at me and I will keep solving it or keep ignoring it because I'm so focused on what I want to accomplish. And sometimes that gets on your way, right? Like I've been to parties where party has just started. It's like 7 p.m. People are just coming and dinner will be served at 10 p.m. So 8, 9, like party's young and you're just gathering. And I look at my time. It's like, okay, I have to get up at 3 a.m. in the morning and time to leave. And I mean, these are my best friends who I've been waiting to for months to get together. And I end up then saying, "Sorry, guys, I just gotta go to sleep," and they think I'm a party spoiler at that point, right? So I
So
would
has
say
somebody
that's the
told you something?
criticism.
Okay, but has somebody come to you and
I
said,
can read people's faces, I don't know if they say that, but I also feel like that's why I said the balance is really important. So I go for periods of intense training, and I would not let these social gatherings kind of get in my way. I would eat, and typically what happens now is they would serve dinner for me early. Now they've gotten so used to it. So whenever I come to go to anyone's house or we go out, they will try to arrange a little bit earlier than their standard time. And then typically they would say, "Oh, Sonia, your food is ready over there if you need to leave early." So it's like, okay. And then I heat it in microwave, I'll eat my food and say everyone goodbye and then go to my bedroom, right? And I'm okay with that, and they have gotten okay with that. But then I once I'm done with those big events like this one, for example, now, and then I take a few months, couple of months break because I do feel that you have to balance it out, and so my next few weeks would be absolutely no issues. I can go a little bit, spend more time, go a bit more crazy. But I would say if I were to say something, I would say, yeah, I probably my husband will tell you is like, yeah, she gets too stuck on like getting up in the morning and he has to do this. And sometimes Friday we are like sleeping early because I have a Saturday early morning run. I'm sure many of you experience that or have that challenge too. So yeah, but I still try to balance.
Got it. All right. The last question I have, which is a question I ask all my guests, is if we made a movie of your life till date, A, what genre would you put it in? And B, who would you hire as an actor to play your role?
Oh my gosh, that is the toughest question I've ever received. So what was the first one? What was the first?
If you made a movie.
If
you made a movie of your life, what genre or what category would you put it in? You know, comedy, adventure, whatever. And B, who would you hire to play your role?
That is a very tough question. So I think movie about myself will not be a comedy. I don't have a very good sense of humor. I don't think so. But I would probably put in the category of adventure, some kind of either mystery or adventure. I would say the character wise, is it sad to say I relate more to male characters than female? Because I think of Aamir Khan as which was the movie he made on the sports, the two girls who were wrestlers. Do you know?
Yeah, Dangal. Dangal.
Dangal. Yeah. So I would put in a Dangal category, and I would say the character would be probably very much like that.
Who would you have to play? Aamir Khan, well, I don't know if he will have to play a woman then. Well, if he's willing to, why not, right? A script on your way, Mr. Aamir Khan. Maybe that's your next challenge, Mr. Aamir Khan. Yeah, why not?
Yes, when he wants to play a female character now.
Yeah.
I think of Priyanka Chopra as one. But I don't know. I will say this. I'll have to think more about it, and probably will email you with my answer. But I would say, Aamir Khan I admire because he can play so many different characters and successfully, right? But on the female side, I would say Priyanka Chopra maybe.
Why not? All right. Hey, that was fun. We learned a few more things about you in the Q&A, and you did well. I think. Coming to a wrap up here, Sonia, I'd like to give you the last word. Any final message you want to pass on to our audience?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, processing my own journey, right, and having conversation like this is very helpful to me too, because it helps me kind of think through where I started and how far I've come along. And as I'm talking to you, like I was thinking in back of my mind. That if someone would have said in 2014, right, when I ran my first marathon, that in less than 10 years, you would have done Badwater. There's no way I would have said that's even possible, right? So I would say the biggest takeaway I have from my own journey, and by the way, multiple athletes that I've studied and met in my life, is that don't set your bar low. We think we cannot do it, but we actually can do a lot more than we believe. So I would say what my advice would be, or I try to adopt myself, is have big ambitions and go for big. Of course, be practical about it. You don't go from not running at all to running 100 miles. But I do think that having those big ambition. And setting the bar high will allow you to then say, okay, instead of saying I can't do it, then you say, okay, how can I, right? Now, what are the things? Let's be practical now. What do I need to do now? Break it out into baby steps. If it's a 2-year plan or a 1-year plan or a 6-month plan, break it down and say, okay, what could be the smaller milestones I can identify and build as part of my life? So that I can see the progress, and ultimately I end up doing what I aspire to do. So I would say, nothing is impossible. You just have to figure out how to get there, and then consistency and kind of staying true to the execution, I say, right? Being able to get up early and do what you thought you're gonna do. Sometimes can be hard. Things come at us. I don't beat myself down every day, but I do look at overall, am I following my plan, right? It doesn't have to be a daily plan, but it has some structure to it. So I would say, yeah, shoot for big things. You know, we all can do it. Nothing is impossible. We just plan for it and we do it.
Yeah, beautiful. Awesome. Hey, Sonia, again, thanks for taking the time out and sharing with us your journey. We're coming to a wrap up here. I'll let you go and enjoy the rest of the afternoon. And you're on your break right now from all the training, so enjoy that bit. I agree that balance is important, and you know you deserve it. Again, thank you. Have a good one.
Thank you so much again. This was a great opportunity, and thank you, Santosh, for what you are doing. You're making a huge impact to community and kind of giving back by organizing these kind of chats. So really appreciate that part as well.
Yeah, thank you, and thanks for your support. Bye-bye.
Absolutely. Bye.